listening to the Rugby Coaches Corner podcast with your host, Andy Plimer. Bringing you up-to-date coaching concepts from the world of rugby. Sharing ideas to make the game better.
All right, welcome to episode 95 of the Rugby Coaches Corner podcast. I'm your host, Andy Plimer, and joining me today is Mike Rogers. Mike coaches with the Chiefs Women's Super Rugby and Waikato Women's Farrah Palmer Cup teams. Formerly, he's had roles in the Mitre 10 Cup with the Bay of Plenty, who were winners in 2019 of that competition. He's the founder of Inside Running Academy and the Athlete Factory NZ, and has been heading up the coaching learning series online. It's a pleasure to have him on the show. So welcome, Mike.
Hey, Andy, mate. Thanks very much for asking me to be on here. Really looking forward to our chat today. And like I said just before when we were framing this up, feel free to stop me at any time.
No, all good. I was keen to get you on because seeing what you're doing, I've been following what you've been doing with the coaching learning series online. I've been following a bit of that on LinkedIn. So I really keen to hear about how that's going. So we'll get to that later in the chat. But what about you? How'd you get into rugby? What'd you get up to? And when did you decide it's time to hang them up?
Yeah, man, I guess like every Kiwi kid, especially 30-something years ago, we all kind of grow up wanting to be an All Black one day. And that was probably the starting point. And I didn't have like a huge family connection with rugby. My family didn't really play the game, and it was just something that kind of sparked my interest. I don't know what it was. Maybe the 87 World Cup might have been that kind of catalyst, and got into the game. Never really played to a massively high standard. Played club rugby in New Zealand for a couple of decent club teams, but never played professionally or anything like that. And I guess that's been, on one hand, probably people see that as a disadvantage going into a professional coaching career, but I think for me it's been a massive advantage in terms of, you know, the relationship skills and relatedness with maybe people who have come from different backgrounds into that professional and sporting environment. So mate, I certainly see that as a strength. And yeah, I always kind of thinking, I know we touched on this just before around my belief is that anyone can learn the tech stuff. It's the relationship skills and the team culture stuff that's, I guess, really hard to learn. And that stuff with diverse experience in terms of growing up and different, you know, life pursuits and things like that, that you soon build up a really good understanding of people. And I think that's that's probably my strength and what I'm really passionate about.
Yeah, no, and I couldn't agree more about, you know, not coming from a professional background as well. Neither did I. Most of us are in that situation, and, you know, you still see a lot of trends in some areas where it's, you know, the door is opened more to those who have come from that professional background. And I agree. I think it's a weakness if you're only targeting those kind of coaches, because those life experiences, and we've seen it before, you can be a great player, but it doesn't mean you're going to be a great coach or even a half-decent coach. That's really important.
Mate, I totally agree. And I've been fortunate enough to be working in environments recently where we've had one coach out of the four or one coach out of the three who's been a recently retired player. Mm. And I've probably been pretty sceptical about that before that, but the skill that they have around reading the room and understanding whether what we're saying as coaches is understood is something really that only an ex-player can see. Like, quite often we think we're speaking the language that's resonating with them, and a few times it's just been jump in with, you know, the ex-player coach would jump in with, hey boys, I think maybe a better way of looking at this would be this, and you can see the penny drop straight away. So I think having somebody in your environment that's recently retired is valuable. So I certainly don't want to be saying that they don't have their place. I think that's just that really, you know, really important to have a diverse group of people on your coaching group.
Yeah, I agree, and good point. All right, and what about your first coaching experiences? What were they like? How'd they go for you? What were some of the big takeaways?
I guess, like every player, you think you know everything, and I certainly wasn't immune from that disease, that's for sure. And I finished playing in 2009 for a local club team here, Tauranga Sports, and ended up coaching them the following year, and went into that with some real big ideas in terms of what I thought we needed to do from a technical and tactical point of view, and really went down that path for 2 or 3 years before probably my first favourite failure, is probably the best way of putting it, came along in 2012. And we had a really strong group of players, you know, 10 or so guys who are currently playing Super Rugby, and those were the days when those players still played club rugby, and I think we might have lost one game all season, and the week before the semi-finals we beat a team 78-3. So you think, I was thinking that I was Graham Henry at that time, which was pretty cool. And then the following week we played them again in the semi-finals and we lost 13-12.
Oh, wow.
And that was probably the first time that I realised that I was on the wrong journey. I was on a journey of wanting to win because it made me feel good, not really caring too much about the athletes that were involved. And, and subsequently found out after diving into a bit of a review that the players didn't particularly like me. They didn't really like my style. They weren't very connected to each other. They didn't have a sense of belonging or identity. And when we got put under pressure at the biggest moment of the season, all those things came to the fore and our entire game fell apart. And so that was really tough. It was probably at that point I was considering, hey, maybe this isn't for me. And but decided to stick with it and made some pretty significant changes in terms of the way that I operated. And I guess that's a constant, is always looking for that. But that was probably the first time that it really dawned on me that those relationships and that culture piece is definitely the most important, and then get that right and you can't take them anywhere.
Yeah, no, that's great that you came away from that. You know, that's got to hurt too. You know, you get that review and that feedback, and I think as coaches we often fear that I know it as a teacher as well. I teach in a college, so the students will give you reviews at the end of the semester, and you're always like a little concerned about that review. But if you change your mindset around it, say, look, this is you know, really good content and really good information for me to grow and develop as a coach. You can get a huge amount out of that. You're always going to have your outliers who either love you or really don't like you at all. But if you can often in those reviews see some really consistent messages there.
Yeah, and there were just lots of mistakes in there that's cool to be able to reflect on them. And I think I was in a mindset where I really wanted the players to like me, which I'm not in that mindset anymore. I'm not too concerned around whether people like me. But I do hope that they respect me and understand how much care I have for them. So, that was definitely a huge learning for me. Was it kind of happened and the opposite was I thought that they liked me, they didn't, and they definitely didn't respect me either. And that all combined with not really liking and respecting each other resulted in a bit of a blowout, I guess.
Yeah. Well, it probably led you to my next question. Before setting up this interview, you talked a little bit about your coaching philosophy and how you've narrowed it down to four key areas, being care, cause, coach, and cohesion. I think that's great. I think it's like to get it like really clear and really precise. I think it's an undervalued part of the coaching journey is to, if you ask someone what's your coaching philosophy, they'll kind of rattle something out, but to have it really precise and really accurate, I think is huge. Can you talk a little bit about those four components of your coaching philosophy?
Yeah, cool. It's kind of taken a while to get to this point, and I think it's not going to be a forever thing either. So I just want to say that, hey, it's still evolving all the time. And I guess it's understanding about the order that they come in. And this is where I think that younger coaches or less experienced coaches jump straight into the coach part first. So, so for me, the starting point is care. And so we have to find ways and construct activity to get the players to understand how much we care about them. And so for me, that's a bit of a process around. So as an example, we recently selected our Waikato women's FPC team for this season. I look after the forwards, so I called all the forwards that made the team and you know, told them the reasons why they'd been selected, spent 5 or 10 minutes with them on the phone, getting to understand them a little bit more. Also called all the players that didn't make it and made sure that they understood that, you know, that was coming from a position of care. Then caught up with all those people individually and in person, again, similar conversations, get to know them a little bit more. And then it's just really around how do we construct our activity so that there's opportunities for those interactions to happen. And, you know, they can happen organically or they can be a little bit more formal, but just always coming from that place and then getting really skillful with our questioning and showing a little bit of vulnerability ourselves as well to hopefully try and get them to open up to. And I'll quite often ask the players, hey, you know what, especially in the forwards, you know, what can I do to help you become a bit more of a beast? And then you'll get answers back initially like, oh, I need help with my tackle technique or whatever. Okay, yep, cool, I can help you with that. That's no problem. Is there anything else that's holding you back at the moment? And then you might get an answer like, oh, look, I really struggle with the detail and I'm really cluttered, or, hey, I've really got some stuff going on at home at the moment, which means when I turn up to training, I'm not always that focused. Then they've given you an opportunity to dive a little bit deeper.
Huge.
Probably the best way of looking at that is sometimes the players will open the door with a little bit of vulnerability to let you in on something. You have to capture that moment. And I kind of think of it, you have to walk through the door with them, like pretty much arm in arm. And we just can't miss those opportunities, because if you miss it, they probably won't give you another one. And I've certainly made that mistake over the years of somebody's opened up a little bit and it makes you feel a little bit uncomfortable or a little bit awkward. And then you kind of brush it off and you regret it afterwards in the car ride home or whatever. But you can't wind back the clock. That opportunity's been missed. And I've tried to wind back the clock and go, oh, hey, what did you mean by that? And then you just get a stone reply, you know. So, yeah, just really capturing those moments is the key thing around the care piece for me.
Yeah.
So I think once we've nailed that, then we can go on around selling whatever our vision is, and that has to be a shared vision. But until you've done that, it's just really words on the wall, eh? So you go into heaps of team environments where they might say, you know, their purpose is, you know, to win a particular competition, or it might be to celebrate the uniqueness of the individuals in their environment, or whatever their real purpose is. But if they don't have an environment of care, you can see that people just walk past that and it really means nothing to them. So I think the care piece is the one that gives us their real ability to connect the people, and then having a shared purpose or a shared goal or a vision is kind of the next step into moving us in the right direction around, hey, how are our behaviours, how well are our behaviours aligned with our vision or our purpose? How well are we living that purpose every day in terms of maybe what we want to achieve? So I guess it's that ability to be checking in against that. But again, it's got to come from a place of care. It can't be probably the word that I hate the most, and all teams use it in their values, is accountability. I think it's a negative word.
Yeah.
I think it's a word that's written on a piece of paper because we don't trust each other. We shouldn't have to talk about accountability. We should just be accountable to each other because we love and care for each other. That's definitely starting to sound like we need to sit around in a circle, hold hands and sing Kumbaya. But
yeah, we were laughing about that beforehand. But you know, I also said before the interview, this is the stuff that I love about coaching. Yeah, I like teaching skills and I like teaching tactics and all that stuff. But I really love seeing a group grow. And you gave the perfect example there for some of the stuff I do, especially around peer review, when players are reviewing each other or they're reviewing a coach or something like that. The very first time they peer review, they will always go to that technical, tactical, oh, your left-hand pass needs a bit of work, or I find your kick decisions, you know. Whereas when you get them to actually start talking about stuff that's not really rugby, that's when you know you've got a really good group or a really mature group that's come along on that journey with you. And that's exciting when it's like that.
Yeah, mate, once you've got them to that point, and we've got to be the same. And I really want to stress that is we can't expect people to operate in one way in terms of our environment, in terms of our players, unless as coaches we're prepared to be the same. So we've got to acknowledge that we're fallible. We've got to acknowledge that we've made mistakes. We've got to acknowledge that we've got our vulnerabilities, things that stress us, and put all that stuff on the table as well, because you can't expect the athletes to open up unless we're prepared to as well. So I always make sure I go through that process as early in the season as possible to let people know a little bit about me in terms of who I am, where I've come from, and you know the reason why I coach and how that's really good for me mentally and my passion being around people. So I think that's important. Once we've nailed the care and the cause, and so kind of my little catchphrase is care plus cause creates culture. And as you said, when we were chatting earlier, culture is the most overused word in rugby, and it probably is in sport and organisations of all shapes and sizes. But I challenge people to reflect on their culture and see whether there's alignment around what their purpose is, and is it a culture of care? And maybe if there isn't those two things, I'd question whether that's actually really a positive culture that you have, or whether it's words on a wall and a whole lot of behaviours that aren't consistent with it. So once we've got an environment that's built on those things, then we can start focusing on the coaching. And I talked a little bit earlier around my favourite failure from 2012, and I've actually made one this year as well. That's probably in the top five. And for the first time, I've decided to coach one of my
kids. It's great you got a top five too. I love that.
Yeah, there's a lot more than five.
But I've got plenty too. Yeah. I've got a greatest hits. It's fine.
Yeah, so this year I'm coaching one of my kids for the first time. So I've never really had time to coach my kids, being a rugby coach, and you're always kind of busy on a Saturday and stuff. So this year I decided I was going to coach my son's team, which is the Mount Maunganui College First 15. And I made a bit of a decision late to jump in on that, and it was probably a week before they got underway in terms of their preseason. And so I turn up with my clipboard on day one, and I've written down all these things, all these objectives that I've got in terms of tech stuff that we wanted to work on. And, you know, it was great for a couple of weeks. And then it was really awesome design trainings with lots of games and lots of breaks from games into skills and back to games. And I was just thinking that I was once again probably Ian Foster this time around. And after about 3 weeks, the players stopped turning up. So we went from having 20 plus players per training to 18 to 17 to 15. And these are kids that I know, like they're mates with my son, and they're still not turning up. And it probably took me about 6 weeks to reflect on that and understood that I made the biggest mistake that I possibly could. And I bypassed the care and the cause, and I went straight to the coach. And it was one of those things where, I'm stepping down from coaching a professional team into coaching a first 15. I just want them to know everything that I know. But to be honest, they don't give a fuck what I know. They really want is to know that I care about them.
And
I missed it. I shortcutted to the coach process because I thought that was where I was going to add most value, and totally went against my philosophy. So it's definitely top five, and it may even be up a bit further, because you would assume that where I'm at the moment, I'd be able to recognise that a little bit earlier and be a bit more deliberate around the way that I go about things. But I guess that's just human nature, as we kind of always go in with what we think will add the most value the quickest, as opposed to, hey, what's really important here is making sure that we make sure those players understand that I really care about them. And, man, I even did a crazy thing. Like, I was losing my mind turning up to training and there weren't many people there, and I was finding it that I was thinking they were being disrespectful. And so I turned up and there was 13 boys there, and I said to them, boys, I'm going back to work and I'm not coming back to your team training until there's 20 people here. So what I was doing was taking responsibility from myself as the coach around why they weren't there, which was totally my fault because I bypassed the culture stuff and handed it back to them and said, this is now your problem. And so if you think about that from a psychological point of view, what would they be thinking then? You know, like they probably were thinking that I was an asshole and I really didn't care about them, because now they had a big problem to deal with that they probably didn't have the skills to deal with to get their mates along to training.
So what was where's that at now? It's an interesting one. How was that recently? Have things progressed?
Things have progressed pretty well, but the horse has definitely bolted on that on a bit of that stuff. So I've been deliberate around positive communication only, getting to know boys, going out of my way to do things for them when I can to try and build a bit of trust. And we got good training attendance, and the team's actually now starting to perform really well. But we're probably only performing as half as well as what we would have had we started the season properly around, hey, let's build some connections, let's get to know each other, let's make sure we all care about each other, understand, you know, what sort of backgrounds we come from, you know, do a camp, spend no time on rugby and spend heaps of time on shared experiences. Yeah, but you can't, unfortunately, when you're in a season, it's really hard to turn back the clock. So you just got to try and, you know, fix things as you go. Yeah, but like obviously it's like very low stake stuff.
Yeah.
It's great opportunity.
Great lessons though too. Then it's, you know, just a perfect example that we're always continually learning as coaching. And if you're not, it's time to move on.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, in the introduction, I mentioned that you had a bit of time in the Mitre 10 Cup with the Bay of Plenty. It's a rugby championship or a rugby tournament or competition that's, you know, right up there with some of the best in the world. What was that experience like? And, you know, what were some of your memories and reflections of that victorious year?
I was really fortunate to be working under an awesome head coach in Clayton McMillan, who's obviously the other head coach of the Chiefs. And Māori All Blacks as well, and he taught me a huge amount around the value of, I guess, relationship skills, but more importantly, how you can use theming as a tool to grow your care, cause, coach stuff in terms of your environment. And and Mitre 10 Cup is a little bit unique in that you only get your Super Rugby players back 2 or 3 weeks before the competition starts. So you have a real short pre-season, and that puts real time pressure on, hey, what do we invest our time in? Do we go down the path of investing our time into culture, or do we go down the path in terms of investing our time into rugby, knowing that we've got our first competition game in 3 weeks' time? And so that's quite a unique challenge. And I think Clayton is really smart in that area around overinvestment and culture early, knowing that we'll get it'll pay dividends in terms of our campaign later on in the season. So both 2019 and 2020, we were pretty slow out of the blocks. Lose a couple of games early in the season, and then we come home strong. And I think that was really reflective of the investment that we made early into the culture stuff, and that even after we'd lost a few games, the players still remain connected and committed to our purpose, and we're able to kind of right the ship and get things going. So that was probably learning number one, which I thought was really awesome. The second learning was around, you just get I know what you'd think in a full-time professional environment, you get a lot of time to coach, but the on-the-field coaching time is really limited. And probably all professional coaches, this resonates with them around, hey, in a week, if you're in a four-person coaching team, you might get to coach half an hour or 40 minutes. And so what that leads to is having to do a huge amount of work away from the grass in terms of meetings, video, getting everything sorted so that when you're on the grass, it's a bit more of a performance zone as opposed to a learning zone. So trying to do as much of your learning as you can away from the field, which has actually been great going into the team that I'm coaching at the moment, because we're only together twice a week, but now the way that my coaching process works, I can get a heap of the learning in remotely. So when we turn up, they're actually all good to go, and we're not kind of starting from scratch when we're at training. So yeah, those were probably the two big ones for me. I guess we all have biases, and it's definitely fueled my biases around the importance of the team culture and connection early in a campaign. Yeah. Even though I was just talking about having made that mistake with the Mountain College boys, but
it's all good. Don't beat yourself up. like I said, we're continually learning. We're always making these kind of mistakes. But what you're saying there about time or lack thereof reminded me. I chatted with Eddie Jones about tactical periodization, and you know he demystified it really well, and he actually said, you know what, like club coaches have the best opportunity there is for tactical periodization to roll that out, because you have 3 hours a week with your players, where realistically most professional teams or national teams have Wednesday And yeah. even that is carved out into certain areas. So, yeah, you raise a good point there, because often club coaches will say, oh, we don't have enough time. But actually, you do, and it's about using that time really effectively.
Yeah, 100%.
All right, and what about the women's Super Rugby in New Zealand? How's that been going? What's the history of the competition so far, and what have your experiences been like so far in that coaching environment?
Yeah, really good question. So this year was the first year that a Super Rugby game has taken place in the women's space, and I was really fortunate enough to get asked by the Chiefs to be part of their coaching group for their inaugural game. So it was just a one-off game between the Chiefs and the Blues at Eden Park, designed to be a bit of a showcase for what's going to be happening next year. So next year, my understanding is there'll be a what's been called a women's elite competition. It'll be under Super Rugby brand between four teams in New Zealand. So, you know, it was just, cool to be part of that first game and something that I'll probably remember forever. And we were fortunate enough to get a good result. So that makes it, that makes it really cool. Coaching women for the first time was awesome. I was really, really nervous. It's funny. I was really, really nervous before my first coaching session, and I wrote down my session plan, and I don't normally do this in detail. So it was so detailed, like there was bullet points and pictures and all sorts for, I think I had 30 minutes on or 20 minutes on defense to get through. And within about 3 minutes of starting, the session plan was out the window, which is cool. But I was really nervous about it. And what I found was super levels of extreme levels of engagement, athletes that were really motivated to grow their game. Lots and lots and lots of questions, which is quite different to the men's game.
Mm-hmm.
And having to develop my coaching style to suit what their needs are, which is slightly different to coaching males. And it's been an awesome experience and something that's super motivating. I come away from all of our sessions with the Waikato FPC team at the moment just buzzing around how much growth we can get in a short period of time and how engaged everybody is in their learning. It's cool. But certainly the women's Super Rugby game was a highlight and something that I hope to be part of in the future.
Yeah. No, I only started coaching women for the last 2 years too, and I've just really enjoyed it. And I think, you know, going back to your coaching philosophy, the care and the cause, I found that coaching women, that part is, one, it's like super, super important, but also something that they will grab onto really quickly. And they'll embrace it a lot faster than the male athletes will be. Obviously, they want to go out and smash the opposition and they want to do big hits and all those kind of things, but they really... what this is obviously from my limited experience of only a couple of years, they really want to go out and play for each other. That's often the driving cause. They want to go out and show everyone, not only the opposition, but everyone who's watching, that they're playing for each other. And again, I think that's not a natural leaning for when you're coaching a men's team.
Yeah, I agree, mate. And it is really cool. And it's actually quite, reinvigorating, because it's the best way of putting it when people have asked me about women's rugby is it's really pure. And so it hasn't probably been, if you think about the amateur days of rugby, it's probably similar to what it was back in those days in terms of the men's game. And then professionalism has changed things a bit, because I think to have longevity as a professional male player, men's rugby player, you need to be a little bit selfish, because you need to look after your body. You need to manage your training week really well. You need to manage all your injuries that you're going to have along the way, and probably make some decisions that are relatively selfish in order to succeed. And I think most professional rugby players would say that. Whereas in the women's game, you don't have that yet, because if they are getting paid, it's not a lot. And they're just so bloody keen, they haven't got sick of it yet, or hasn't become like a job. So, mate, I'm really enjoying it for those reasons, because I don't hear people complaining about being at training. I don't hear people saying, we should train really hard because we've got a day off tomorrow. All those sort of things that creep into a men's environment, which is cool, because I understand the demands in the men's game are probably a lot higher around training load and intensity, and definitely the collision load in games is, you know, crazy these days. So I get it.
Yeah. Well, isn't it amazing that it's only now that there's been Super Rugby in New Zealand for a women's competition? I think that's a long time coming. So I can't wait to see how it rolls out. And I think it's because you're seeing the formations of it in Australia as well. Australia's probably actually a year or two ahead in this front. And I think it's going to be, you know, a really good shot in the arm for grassroots rugby, for the women's game, to have women's matches on television. And, you know, I also think women's coaches as well, that needs to be a priority for any kind of competition like this. Is there, what's the process there? Are you familiar with what the goals are there in terms of having women coaching the teams in some capacity?
Oh, mate, I think it's really important. You know, it's like any transformative processes. We need to be, you know, creating pathways for people to come through. And, you know, I'd love to see a woman coach in the All Blacks one day. I don't see why that's, people will just think that, you know, some people would think that's ludicrous. Like, I think men and women bring different strengths to environments. And I think it's an absolute necessity that we have women involved with all of the coaching groups at Super Rugby level next year. And, you know, the same thing in our sevens teams as well. And, you know, then that's obviously going to create a little bit of ambition for women who are involved in rugby, maybe to, commit to their coaching careers and progress, because they can actually see a pathway which in the past hasn't really existed. So, and I think it's a necessity, and I really look forward to this year. I coached with LaToya with the Chiefs, and she was great at reading the room, like way better than I do. Mm. And, you know, that's just a strength that she was able to bring. And, mate, we need to be tapping into those things in all of our environments.
Yeah, no, 100% agree. And I'm an assistant coach for a university side, for a women's side, and the head coach is a woman. And she will do stuff that I will think, oh, what's going on here? But then an hour later I'll go, I get it, exactly why she's doing it. And because she understands, you know, the playing group, and she's been in those kind of environments before. And I think, like you said before, the more diverse our coaching groups are, the better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. And the Waikato Women's Farah Palmer Cup team. So that's a club team that would have players reaching out into representative rugby and eventually Super Women's Rugby. Is that accurate?
Yeah. So how the women's structure works in New Zealand is obviously we have the Black Ferns at the top of the tree. Mm-hmm. And from next year we'll have a four-team, Super Rugby competition. Then sitting below that we have Farah Palmer Cup, which has basically been the amateur/semi-pro provincial comp that's existed in New Zealand for quite a while now. And that's two pools of seven teams each. And right. So the Waikato team that I'm coaching this year, we're in the two divisions of seven teams. We're in the top division. We're beaten in the final by Canterbury last year, who are really dominant in women's rugby in New Zealand at the moment. And so I'm coaching with a guy by the name of James Semple in that team, and he's been coaching in the women's space for quite a while and thoroughly enjoying coaching with him. Really, really smart attacking mind, and certainly a lot more experience than me in terms of coaching females. And it's yeah, mate, it's going good. We had our camp on the weekend and created a couple of new rituals, which is always good. So we now start every team meeting with a song. So I had to start that process my idea, which is cool.
What did you roll out?
I rolled out "We Will Rock You," but it was a bit of a cop out because I got the mini teams competing against each other singing the song, and so I just kind of led. I was more like the composer at the front of the room as opposed to necessarily the one standing out front singing.
If you've got the microphone, you're in charge. It's your call.
Yeah.
that's awesome. That sounds like a lot of fun. And what are some of the challenges, especially for the athletes, and how like in that semi-pro environment where there are hopes and dreams and goals to go to that next level, what are some of the challenges that the players face preparing for a collision-based sport, and how have you gone about trying to alleviate some of those issues?
I think there's probably two things. One, off-field is, and you forget this when you're a male, and I know this is a real gross generalisation, but I think it's pretty accurate, is, you know, it's not often in the men's game that men will be bringing their babies to training or games. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. generally they've got a mum or a partner at home that's taking care of that side of their lives for them. And, you know, we had a couple of babies at camp on the weekend. There's quite often children at training because, you know, people haven't been able to get support around childcare and stuff like that. We've got two women on the team who are still breastfeeding. Mm. Mate, it's just a totally different dynamic and something that I was just so... I couldn't have been further away from the reality of what that might be like. And I just have a huge amount of respect for how these women are able to juggle that and still go and put their bodies on the line in training when they're breastfeeding or running around after their kids, which I think which is really, really cool to see. And it just shows their commitment, and it probably adds to that purity that I talked about earlier. Mm. Probably the other thing is around a lot of the women haven't been in strength and conditioning environments or are new to strength and conditioning environments. And so there's some body positions, and you know, probably not too dissimilar to men who maybe haven't done a lot of S&C stuff, is around body awareness or body control around the collision. Mm-hmm. And it's a real big driver for me, because it's really important that we ensure that people are safe in the collision.
Yeah.
And so we do a lot of work on scrum primers and collision primers before training and during trainings to prepare the people for contact and getting them to feel what it's like to be in good body shape for taking contact and stuff like that. And I'm not saying that it's something that's unique to women's rugby, but it's definitely probably more prevalent. And so we've got to adjust the way that we, you know, we plan to, you know, ensure that people are safe. And then also the cool thing about it is once you start establishing those things, all of a sudden people are able to transfer a little bit more power and then start dominating some collisions, and that always feels good. So
yeah,
it's actually not that much of a long process, but it's definitely been something that's been a really big priority for me.
All right. Well, like I said at the top of the show, you've been hosting a coach learning series online, and you've been promoting that on LinkedIn, and that's how we originally connected. What was your original motivation for creating that series, and how's it progressed so far?
Mate, I've been loving it. Original motivation was last year during lockdown in New Zealand. So we were fortunate enough that I think we were in lockdown for 6 or 8 weeks or something. And I was really fortunate. I've got a couple of mates that coaching overseas, and they put together one of my friends, Orlando Sawakai, who's a forwards coach at Kubota in Japan. I put together a group of coaches, and we'd get on a Zoom once a week, and each one of us would have a crack at presenting. And we did heaps of cool stuff, and we had, you know, really, in the end, there was probably 20 people on that group and coaching all around the world. And it was awesome to see different perspectives of professional coaches and different environments around tech stuff, but also cultural stuff and mindset stuff. And it was a huge learning experience for me, and I probably filled up, I was working off an A3 notepad at the time, and I'd use one whole notepad per session, and that's quite cool actually. I need to go through it again and have a read of some of the notes. And anyway, we got out of lockdown, started training again, applied some of the learnings, but not all, because you're straight back into it. And kind of got through that, and then went back and had a look at my A3 again and saw there was heaps of stuff that I wanted to explore further. And then I got talking to some community coaches or amateur coaches around, you know, what learning they'd done over that period. And they'd done some stuff, but had kind of felt a bit isolated because there wasn't availability of, you know, the level 2 course, level 3 course, stuff like that wasn't happening. And I was like, man, there's actually a bit of a gap here, because in a professional sense, we were doing more PD than we'd ever done before. And for our amateur and semi-pro coaches, they were probably doing less than they ever had before. And they were still no closer to being able to access professional coaches to assist them with their growth. And so the idea of the Coach Learning Series came about basically to offer access to professional level coaching resources to amateur and semi-pro coaches over a Zoom or recorded and watched back later. And we'll do a reflection exercise and some homework for the week as well. So it's all really informal. So someone will jump on, and I'll invite a coach to come on and present. they'll present on that topic. It'll be it's really open in terms of questions throughout. Try and make it a real open, kind of low-key type environment, and then set a couple of tasks for the week, have a WhatsApp group for the course that's just filling up my phone's going off constantly with people putting stuff on there, which is really cool to see that community.
Mm.
And, mate, it's been awesome. And like I said to you when we were having our chat prior, the amount of learning for me has been phenomenal, both in terms of my presentation techniques or style when I'm presenting, but then also learning from other people and changing some of my coaching practice. So I think I'm probably the luckiest man in the world that I get to facilitate a course where I'm learning just as much as or probably more than other people are. So,
yeah,
mate, it's been awesome.
Yeah, 100%. You know, a lot of that resonates with me as well from running this podcast for almost 6 years. It's I could never have amassed the amount of information from formal professional development. And I think that's a message to coaches too, is that you don't just have to rely on formal PD from your national body or your provincial body. You can seek it out. And the amount of people I've reached out to just to have a chat on a podcast through LinkedIn, and the percentage of people who say yes, there's people out there that will have a yarn with you about rugby. And, you know, there's other ways to do it as well, like with what you're doing and joining in on that stuff. So, you know, being intrinsically motivated to go out and seek out the answers or potential answers, it's a really important factor for coaches to consider.
Yeah, I just want, like, there's been lots of people who have expressed an interest and then have decided not to do the courses. And I think, and that's absolutely fine. But I think a lot of times the barrier is around stuff like imposter syndrome and feeling safe to be in an environment, maybe when you don't think you know a lot, et cetera. But the key thing is we're all on a journey, and it doesn't really matter what you know, as long as you're keen to learn and you don't even have to contribute a lot, just being there and listening and taking in stuff, if that's the first step, or even if just watching the recordings back is the first step in your learning, and then you get the courage to jump on the call, and then you get the next one, you've got the courage to ask a couple of questions, and then all of a sudden you're an active participant and you're learning. My job as a facilitator is just to try and make that as safe as possible. And it's certainly challenging over Zoom. It's a lot more difficult than like an in-person course, but that's the world we live in. And I just probably have to get a little bit better at it.
Yeah. Well, how do you manage the post-session beers?
To be fair, I'm really good at that, but I'm just not sure whether everybody else is on board with it.
They got to sign a waiver beforehand, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, you talked about big learnings. What, like reflecting on, you know, you said you've done 20 odd so far. What were some of the big things that jump out for you just thinking about it now?
The biggest learning for me, in terms of it overall, has been the desire from the coaches around their learning has really been focused on tactical, technical. And that's cool because that provides coaches with some tools to get out there on the grass and probably improve their practice, their coaching practice, which is awesome. And, you know, I've picked up a couple of things that I've implemented straight away that are technical things that I just thought, oh, man, that's a great way of describing that or coaching that. But the real big learning is, I think the gold as coaches has got nothing to do with technical, tactical. It's all the stuff we were talking about earlier around the environment. And I've really struggled facilitating discussion around that. And people look like you can just pick up their body language. Some people just turn their cameras off straight away. they're probably thinking, oh, shit, Mike's talking about this stuff again. Makes me feel uncomfortable, or it's a load of bullshit or whatever. But yeah, if somebody could help me with how I get people to that point, or, you know, some ideas around how we can have a virtual environment where we can be talking about environmental coaching and relationship skills and stuff, and that would be awesome because at the moment, it's a bit of a battle, but it's something that I'm going to persevere with because I believe that it's really, really important.
Yeah, I'd probably hazard a guess that most coaches aren't competent or comfortable in leading these kind of cultural changes within the groups that they're coaching with, and more so that they've never been coached in an environment like that, and they also don't really know where to turn in terms of how to structure it, because it's a skill, and it's also a ticking time bomb if you get it wrong, or if you start it and then abandon it. I think there would naturally be some hesitancy there, and the rock star for me was Ray McLean. I had him on the podcast very early on for that reason, is that his book Any Given Team was just a game changer for me 12 years ago, when same thing as with you, the top five greatest hits of complete coaching disasters. Once you get to number five, you're like, okay, we've got to do some change here. His processes around building, guiding, facilitating cultural change are fantastic. I really endorse them, and I think, he was one of the first. He was the first to come up with the leadership group. He was first to come up with the trademark. He was first to come up with peer review and those kind of things. And I've been doing it as a coach with all my teams for over a decade, and it is a very challenging concept to be able to roll out in a team environment. It can be daunting.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It is definitely daunting, eh? And it's because you have to make the commitment to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the Kia cause thing. You can't start that and then stop it, because it'll do more damage than if you just didn't do it all together.
100%.
Because people will feel like you've abandoned them, or you've abandoned the purpose of why we're there. So I just need to keep finding creative ways to layer that stuff in, just to get people thinking about it. Like, I think the more we think around the environment stuff, how we can maybe integrate one or two things a week that are enhancing our environments, the better.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Awesome. If people are interested in jumping on board with the Coach Learning Series, what's your coordinates, or what's the kind of cost involved for joining into the series?
Mate, this is awesome. I didn't realize I was going to get the opportunity to plug my stuff on here.
Full plug.
This is definitely getting edited out.
No way.
Best way to contact me is either email or LinkedIn. So my email is mike@insiderunning.com, and you can find me on LinkedIn. Just Mike Rogers on there. That'll come up pretty easily. The cost of the courses, they're 5-week courses. They're $180 New Zealand dollars. So I think that works out at roughly $35 per session. And they run for 5 consecutive weeks. All the sessions are recorded and put up on a Facebook group, and we also have a WhatsApp for each course that I've run so far, and try and create a community on there around learning and sharing.
Awesome.
And that's been, that's been going really well. And like, one of the courses finished about 10 weeks ago, and I'm still getting messages on there from people sharing stuff with each other and people putting out problems that they have with something that's happening. And I'll kind of look at it and just wait to see what the community offers, and the community is solving those problems for each other, which I think is pretty awesome for a group of people who all live in different places around the world and have never met each other in person. So, mate, creating a community is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, I definitely won't edit this part out, and I definitely will put your coordinates in the show notes as well, so people can scroll down and check it out. And I think it's to do it in the comfort of your own home and have that community, like you say, is a great thing. All right. Well, last thing before we finish off on the final four questions, you're also running the Athlete Factory NZ and Inside Running Academy. Athlete Factory NZ, I took a look at your website, and I was just loving the focus on the long-term athlete development model, the LTAD. This is an area that I feel coaches really need to at least get across in terms of what are the age bands where you should be doing certain things and should be moving away or not trying certain things, especially when we're talking in age grade, junior, minis, rugby, those kind of things. What's your focus with the LTAD approach to learning and motor skill development? What are some of the things you think coaches should be aware of in that model?
Well, where do we start on this one? It's a bit of a big topic, mate. It could just about be a podcast on its own.
Yeah, but, yeah.
There's lots to this, but it's pretty simple if you want to break it down. So for younger kids, our focus is really learning through games. And then if we are doing anything that isn't a game, it's directly relatable to the game that we're playing. So I challenge our coaches all the time that, you know, if we're doing a running mechanics drill, it has to be replicated in the game that we play after that, because we need even 5 or 6 year olds to understand the connection between any sort of closed drill type activity that we're doing or repetition based thing, to understand how that relates to whatever they're doing in a game. And just from an engagement point of view, I think that's really important, but also a learning perspective, it accelerates that learning if they can actually understand why it's important. So that's probably stage one. The stage two is really around their PHV, so their growth spurts, and ensuring that we make our environment really, really safe for athletes as they go through that, because they lose their coordination and a lot of core strength and stuff that goes with that, and have a real high risk of injury, especially around patella injuries and stuff like that, where their bodies, they've just lost control of their bodies for a while and everything's growing a bit quickly, and maybe the ligaments and tendons and stuff aren't adapting quick enough. And so ensuring that we're not doing a huge amount of volume on feet, we're not doing a heap of jumping and landing, and certainly not doing any like heavy lifting or anything like that for people that are going through that. So coaches understanding that from a rugby point of view is really important, because chances are you've got kids that are going through that and you're just coaching them like everybody else. And maybe part of your coaching is they get on the line and they do, I hope not, but would be get on the line and do 20 hundreds or something cool like that. And that's probably not the way forward for people, for kids who are going through that, because they're just going to start breaking down. I think we lose a lot of kids in rugby that are going through their growth spurt and they just don't enjoy it anymore because they're either sore or uncoordinated, and it probably becomes a little bit dangerous. But from a athlete development perspective, is being really mindful of that and making sure that they're supported, and we just change up the activity so that we can actually be, you know, helping them regain control of their bodies. And then ultimately, after we come through that, is really just around introducing a strength and conditioning environment to people, to the athletes, without it being too structured. So we don't want 14-year-olds on individual programs and they come to the gym 4 times a week and they get sick of it after 6 months and never come back. But after time, there might be room for that, you know, once they've shown a bit of autonomy and they might be really self-motivated and stuff, and that might be the best way for them to train. But certainly to begin with, trying to keep kids in groups and having heaps of fun and, you know, learning through competition and stuff like that to keep the engagement levels high, I think it's really important. So it's really the age and stage challenge, and it's making sure that we're keeping people safe, supporting them appropriately, but then challenging them where we can, and then supporting them again is probably the best way of looking at it. But it is a little bit technical around, especially around the peak height stuff. But you can see that most of the time, you can see that with your own eyes. If you're a coach with some decent observation skills, you'll see that somebody's lost a bit of coordination. So you've got to try and support them with that, because it's pretty daunting for kids, eh?
Yeah, for sure. And they're in that teenage years as well. They're not comfortable in their own skin. And we do see big dropouts in, you know, that 14 and 16-year-old age groups is where we see the dropouts. So I think coaches who are coaching in those age groups really need to be aware of that. Just talking about this reminded me of, I had David Joyce on quite a while back. He was the high performance guy for the Western Force at the time. He's now with the Greater Western Sydney Giants, I think, still. But his book on high performance coaching talks a lot about peak height velocity and ways to measure it and ways to accommodate for those kind of things.
And I know I only really touched on the physical aspects. At the same time, there's a lot of psychological changes happening at the same time. And so making sure that our environments are supportive is always really challenging as a coach, because you'll probably find that you're getting frustrated at times. I remember a junior coach asking me, what do you do if you have kids that are just talking the whole time and they're disengaged in your coaching? I'm like, change your coaching.
Turn the mirror inwards. Yeah.
Have a look. But he was kind of like, well, I make them go and sit under the goalposts. I'm like, well, that's cool, but I'm pretty sure he's going to get sick and tired of that after a while. And he's like, oh, he'll change his behaviour. I'm like, I don't think he will. I think he just probably won't come back. So making sure, I think it's really important to make sure that our environments are safe, which is challenging, eh? Like, there's a lot of stuff that we don't even have any idea about what goes on with social media and bullying and stuff these days.
100%.
Our sports environments need to be a little bit of respite from that.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, couldn't agree with you more. All right, and the Inside Running Academy, that's been going for a while now. What's the description of that program?
So Inside Running Academy is our international rugby program. Unfortunately, due to the New Zealand border being closed due to COVID, we stopped operating in March last year, and we're still closed at the moment and won't reopen again until the border opens, which it's anyone's guess when that might happen. But that's certainly been a bit of a void for me because I really love what we created here. So in 2019, we had 158 players attend the academy from 28 different countries around the world.
That's great.
Anything from 2 weeks to kind of 40 weeks in duration, and is an awesome environment. People here who are motivated to get better at rugby but also have a life experience, and the amount of growth that we could get out of people from a rugby and personal perspective when they're away from their comfort zone and maybe away from comfort zone, maybe away from mum and dad in terms of expectations around various things, and we could it's awesome. Like, it's just a great way to be able to shape and shift people's thinking and through a lens of rugby, which is just a great way of doing it because there's some universal things about rugby which are pretty unique. So may not be missing it, that's for sure. So hopefully our Prime Minister's listening, and she can get this vaccination stuff sorted and we can get some people into the country.
All right, Mike, well, we always end the show with the same final four questions. Question one, when you were a kid growing up in New Zealand, who was that first player who really got you into rugby and that, you know, had the poster up in the bedroom wall, all that kind of stuff?
I have to say Michael Jones.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Pretty awesome player and I think changed the way that we probably thought around loose forwards in particular at the time.
Yeah, cool, awesome, good name. And what about now? Who are some of the players you like watching, whether it be, you know, in a super level or on the world stage?
I think he hasn't been playing in New Zealand for a while, but Brodie Retallick is probably the player that I admire most over most recent times. Like, there's not too many locks in the world that are kind of thrown around as being contenders for World Player of the Year in a few years in a row. So I think he's pretty awesome. And have a huge amount of time for Sam Kane as well. So fortunate enough to have coached him in his first year of senior rugby before the favourite failure number one. So I don't know what he probably thinks of me as a coach, but he's a top man. And,
giving him a shout out. He'll like that.
Yeah. Really admire his tenacity around coming back from injury and sticking with it. So
For sure,
good bad plenty man.
Yeah, cool. And third question, what about high profile coaches? Who are some of the coaches you like how they run things?
Probably the grandfather of New Zealand coaching or rugby is Wayne Smith. And you don't go too far in New Zealand without hearing that name being thrown around. And I've certainly learnt a lot from Smithy in terms of his humanistic approach. So all the stuff we've already talked about today. And he was probably the first one in New Zealand to really start talking about that. And, really, really enjoy that. Dave Rennie is another one that I have a huge amount of respect for as well. So managed to be in the Chiefs environment a couple of times to observe Rennie in action and really loved his care for people, but also his ability to switch from care to edge. And quite often by not saying very much, but just saying enough for everybody to understand that, hey, it's great to have a jovial, fun, friendly environment, but we're actually here to play a contact sport. And at some point our mindset needs to shift to that.
Yeah.
I think he's a bit of a master at choosing those moments around that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, he's got a good dad stare, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, and you can see that. Like it's, yeah, mate. Those two would be, two big ones for me. And I actually listened to a podcast the other day on Alex Sanderson, and mate, I think that guy's. It's just great to see somebody who's really different. Look, lots similar to, I guess, Razor Robertson in New Zealand, but I think even bigger step for a coach in the UK to be really, really different to that kind of mould up in the UK around what maybe a coach is supposed to, how a coach is supposed to act. And I just think it's great that there's people in this world who are prepared to be different and actually, you know, do some different stuff. When he was at Saracens, I was there as an observation for a day as part of some PD and managed to get into one of their team meetings, and he led a discussion around the theme for that week, and it was something around the story of the apple and the snake or something. I can't remember it, but he was just off the wall. Like, I was just sitting there going, where is this guy taking this chat? And then it all came back in together, and I was like, man, that was amazing. And all the boys were standing up, clapping and cheering, and it was like 20 minutes presentation around how they were going to go about beating Northampton. But he's one out of the box, mate, and I reckon we should celebrate people like that.
100%.
He's the man.
Cool. Awesome. Final question. Who's someone in your community in the grassroots who deserves some recognition and a shout out?
My partner's going to laugh at this one, there's a man by the name of Jay Carter. He's also got a podcast called the Talking Performance Podcast, so you'll probably edit that out as well.
The more pods the better.
And he's been my coach mentor for the last 4 or 5 years. He's actually the New Zealand golf coach, so he doesn't come from a rugby background but loves rugby. But the work that he does around connecting coaches, connecting people, both through his podcast and other stuff that he does, and he's always giving of his time. Mate, I think he deserves a lot of recognition and probably just needs to put himself out there a little bit more.
All right, good advice. All right, Mike, well, it's been awesome chatting with you about Women's Super Rugby in NZ, your coaching journey, and also the coaching course that you're creating online. It sounds like a great community you're developing there, so... congrats on that, and all the best for the season as it progresses. And thanks again for giving up some of your time.
Hey, thanks, mate. Really appreciate it, Andy. Thoroughly enjoyed the chat, and yeah, huge respect to you for the work that you do in this space.
Awesome. Thanks, mate. Appreciate that. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Rugby Coaches Corner podcast. Enjoyed the show, please leave a review via iTunes and keep listening for the next episode. You can also follow us via Twitter at RugbyCoachesCNR or via the website therugbycoachescorner.com. Until next time, keep sharing ideas to make the game better.